Winston Marsh, a professional speaker based in Australia, is a marketing guru who helps businesses make more money. Heaps more money. In this first half of this fascinating interview, Winston addresses his distinctive license plate that helps him remember a key rule in marketing, as well as his unique formula for substantially increasing your revenue. You'll hardly be able to wait for next week for the second half.
We're speaking with Winston Marsh this morning from Australia. Winston is a business speaker known as the marketing guru. He helps businesses make more money, as he says, heaps more money. So let's start this morning, Winston, if that's all right with you. And I understand that you have a license plate that's somewhat unique, and it is WII-FM. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, good day, Ed, and good to talk to you and all of your listeners. Look, that's my reminder to my clients, my permanent reminder to all of my clients, that if they want to sell anything to anybody, what they have to do is put themselves in their prospect's shoes and answer just one question: what's in it for me? You'll hear people refer to it as a marvelous radio station to which prospects' ears are tuned. They want to know what your product or service will do for them. You can tell them how good your company is, how long you've been in business, all that sort of thing, but that won't wash. What works is to get them excited about what your product or service will achieve for them. It's amazing when you've got a license plate like that, you know, Ed. I have people pull up at traffic lights and roll down their windows and say, "I can't work it out. What does it mean?"
To some who are older, it might be World War II.
Well, I had a retired man who used to walk past my home every day. He knew me, but he was too polite to ask what it meant. And he finally said, "I've worked it out." And this guy's about 85. And I said, "Yeah, what do you reckon it means?" He said, "I think it means Winston Marsh is an incredible flaming maniac."
Marvelous.
Could have been true, too.
Right. Well, I know that you speak to organizations about increasing their revenues. And one of the formulas that you use, or you talk about, is a 2x2x2. How would you explain that? What does that formula mean?
Well, Ed, first of all, if you multiply 2x2x2, what's the answer?
Obviously, it's 8.
8. So my question to you, Ed, and to all of your listeners is, would you like to increase your bottom line profits by around 8 times, 800%?
Anybody who's not a fool will obviously say yes.
Okay. Well, as a precursor to understanding 2x2x2, you've got to know one of my other simple rules. And that is that you've got to start doing things differently. You see, most businesses do what every other business does. And if you do what every other business does, you'll get the results that every other business gets. You'll be average, somewhere between best of the bottom and bottom of the best. So my rule is to do what other businesses don't do. Now, Ed, I'm not for one moment suggesting that you should drive through red lights or drive on the wrong side of the road, like we do here in Australia, or any of those things. There are some rules you've got to stick by. But with any business, my question is never, what do you do the same as everybody else? It's, what do you do differently? And you know, Ed, in most businesses, it's difficult to find things they do differently, isn't it?
It is.
Most businesses just look like various shades of grey. You find that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, with a legal firm, it's very hard outside of the firm to see any difference between one firm and another.
That's right, and they're good lawyers, and in today's world, one can no longer talk about how good one is, because in the minds and eyes of the viewer, the prospective client, they perceive that once you have that law school graduate degree and that bar exam certificate, that you're as qualified to practice law as the next person.
Yeah.
They don't see the differences.
So that, of course, is all about finding the differences
mm-hmm.
in the mind of the prospect. And, of course, there's another rule there that helps people find those differences. Problem for many people in business, whether they be lawyers or doctors or plumbers, is that they suffer from a disease known as the curse of assumption. The curse of assumption is the belief that everybody knows what we know. Now, if everybody knew what we knew, guess what job they'd be doing?
That's right.
They'd be doing our job.
That's right.
You've got to think naively, even for the most powerful business prospect. What they know about the law or architecture or plumbing is very little. They're looking for you for information, guidance, and advice.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that, because the curse of assumption, I think, is really at the very heart of what a lot of people suffer from when they don't have the confidence to speak up and speak out, because they assume that everybody knows what they know, and what they know is just so commonplace that the other person wouldn't be interested in hearing from them.
That's right. Now, Ed, just sidetracking before we get to 2x2x2, if you want to make the curse of assumption work for you, you've got to be able to say this phrase. Let me see if I can do it clearly and succinctly. The phrase is, Let me do that again.
Okay.
Can you do that for me? Can you do that for me, Ed? I just want to check that you can. Okay.
Does now, that work?
Yes, it did. What happens is, you know, you go out somewhere and somebody says, what do you do? Well, you could have, and I do, have a good little elevator speech, as they call it, to say, I'm a lawyer. And they say, that's interesting. I wonder who's going to win the Super Bowl. So you've got to do it a little differently. You say, I'm a lawyer. By the way, do you have a lawyer? And they'll say yes, or they'll say no. And you say, when they answer it, Now, when any professional says, to you, what have you got to know? Why they are hmming.
Right.
When professionals go, there's always some bad news after it. If I said I'm a lawyer and you went, have you got one, Ed? And you said, yes, I have. And I went, you'd say to me,
I'd say to you, what does that mean?
What's that all about?
Right.
Now I've got to have something powerful that gets your attention. And I'd probably say to you, well, if you've got a run-of-the-mill, typical lawyer, you've probably got 5 areas of your business in immediate jeopardy. You see, there's a mistake that many lawyers make. Do you think I'd have your interest? Do you think you'd want to say to me, hey, what's that? What's that all about?
Right.
And the answer is, of course. And of course, to do all that, you've got to practice it. You've got to PRD it and to practice, rehearse, and drill. Too many people don't do those sort of things. They don't look at how to introduce their business to a person in a way that has them lusting to know more. Lusting, panting, breathing hard, wanting to know more. And it is simple to do, if you remember that curse of assumption. Hey,
yeah.
Ed, I'm getting away from what you wanted to talk about. Let's talk about this 2x2x2.
The sidetrack is quite interesting, though, because the whole nature here of what you're talking about is to keep the conversation alive, to keep it moving forward so that you stay engaged with the prospect and this prospect wants to know more from you.
Well, if you want me to, let me take you through the rest of that sequence. I've got you saying, after I've gone, I've got you saying to me something like, Well, what's that all about? You know, why are you saying, hmm? And I say, well, before I answer that, let me ask a couple of questions. Now, of course, because I'm focusing on them and because I'm asking them questions about themselves and not talking about me, they're going to agree to that because people love talking about themselves. In fact, not enough people ask us about ourselves in this modern world. So they say, sure. So I ask them some questions, and if I were a lawyer, they would not necessarily be legal questions. They would be questions that would disturb them. They might be questions about business. They might be questions about what's happening in their industry and so on.
Right.
I would, however, in all of that, ask them some questions about their business, just short ones, not intrusive. And I would ask them some questions that disturb them. You know, a typical question I ask a person that disturbs them is, are you lucky with money? And most people say, well, no, but they can't help themselves. They're curious. Why? And I say, I'll come to that in a moment. When I've asked them four or five questions about themselves, all of which stimulate their interest, they want to know why I'm asking these questions, I then say to them, look, on what you've told me, I think there are three things that you really need to be looking at. And they say, what are they? And I say, well, it's a bit difficult at this cocktail party. It's a bit difficult over dinner. Why don't we exchange cards and we'll get together and I'll take you through them. I'll run the rule over your business and give you some answers. And guess what they say? Fine.
That's right. It sounds like a freebie, and they want to hear more about what's going to benefit their business.
And what I've done is disturb them.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't told them how good I am. I haven't mentioned me other than to say I'm a lawyer. I haven't sung my praises. I haven't told them I've been in business for 40 years. I haven't told them that I'm the specialist in this, that, or the other. I've just talked about them and their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are phrases I love to use, like, probably in your business there's a time bomb just ticking over, waiting to go off. You know, phrases like that intrigue and people can't stop themselves wanting to know more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to do. One of my favorite questions when people ask, you know, how much or why should I do something, I simply look at them and say, tell me, how much do you know about widgets? Or how much do you know about family law? Or how much do you know about estate law? And, of course, what do most people know about these sort of things if they're not in that sort of business?
Winston, let me pass a question by you, if I may. A number of lawyers, particularly in the small firms or solo practitioners, say, I've got as much business as I can handle and still have a life. What would you respond to somebody like that?
I'd say, get real, get real. Now, I hear that. I don't only hear that from lawyers. I hear it from plumbers. I hear it from retailers. And what a load of garbage. Let us be very, very clear about why we're in business. We're in business to make sufficient money to prematurely retire to the beaches of the world with oceans of money washing all over our magnificent bodies. Now, I know you'll say you haven't got a magnificent body, but if you've got oceans of money washing over your body, you've got a great body.
Right.
So what is happening is people have enough business to fill the available time. But that's not what it's all about, because they're grinding it out. If you have too much business, there is simply one thing you must do. You put your fees up by 20%. And guess what happens? When you put your fees up by 20%, at most, you'll lose 10% of your clients. And those 10% will be the whingers and complainers. They'll be the people who you don't want anyway. They're the price loyal people. So now you've got 10% less clients, but you're getting 20% more money. The effect of that is you are working 10% less and earning 10% more. Heavens, if we keep on talking, by the time we've finished, you won't even have to go into the office. You'll be earning that much, and you'll be doing bugger all business.
That's right. That's right.
But, and people say, well, I've put my fees up. And I say, what happened? And most people say, nothing. So I say, do it again. You know, there's an old-fashioned rule that we all forget, and that is, we were taught at our mother's knee that in life we get what we pay for. And the corollary to that is, the more you pay for something, the better it must be. So what happens? You want to be on the expensive side of the fee schedule, but people have got to know and understand what they're getting. And you'll hear people say, my lawyer is very expensive, but he's good because.
Right.
And it won't necessarily be because of how he does the law. Let's face it, most people will never find out whether you're a good lawyer until the writ drops on their table or the feds come to take you away. We can't tell whether people are good at the law. We can't tell whether a chiropractor is good or a dentist is good. We assess whether they're good or not by the perception. And perceptions aren't created by a person doing the business. Remember, it's not the product or the service or the premises that produce the profits. It's the people and the perceptions they create. You know, one of the ways of creating a perception that you're a good lawyer is when somebody rings up to get an appointment with you and they talk to your receptionist, she never finds or he never finds the appointment easily. They've always got to look through, and they say as they're looking for something, ooh, gee, his schedule's tight. So many people want his advice. Let me see where I can squeeze you in. And they make comments. They say, oh, isn't that great? You've got an appointment with him this week. People just are wanting to do business with him because he's such a good lawyer. That's a third-party endorsement. Sure, it's coming from your receptionist, but it's coming from somebody that they can understand, that they can believe and trust.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all those perceptions that are so critical.
That's right.
The positioning is, get to be the most expensive or almost the most expensive lawyer in town, but have people know what it is that makes you expensive.
It's the service, it's the interaction, it's the relationship that they understand, not the mechanics of the practice.
That create the perceptions. Remember, perception is reality.
That's right.
I've got an accounting firm here in Melbourne, and I looked at how busy it was to come and see this accounting firm. So for their A-class clients, they don't have to worry about parking. For every client that comes to see them, we valet park their car. Now, that's got nothing to do with how good they are as an accountant, but people say, oh, when I go and see my accountant, they valet park the car. And other people think, gee, my accountant doesn't do that. Their first question is, what's their name?
Right.
Now, they might be terrible accountants, but the perception they create, how they look after people, is sensational.
And then if you do that, then you can grow your practice. And if you grow your practice beyond just yourself, you actually have something of value. And you have somebody else then that can help you carry the load of the increased work.
Not only carry the load, it then gives you the time to prematurely retire to the beaches of the world with oceans of money washing all over your magnificent body.
That's right.
Because we're not here for a long time.
That's right.
We're here for a good time.
And if you don't do that, then anytime you get sick or anytime you go on vacation, God forbid you should take one, then your business literally comes to a stop.
Yeah, when you die or when you get sick, your business horse dies or you get sick. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember, owning a business, when you own a business, you are the owner of the business. And the owner of the business should be managing, directing, and controlling, not doing. When you've finished managing, directing, and controlling, and maybe dealing with one or two clients who you like and pay you a lot of money, you disappear to the aforementioned beaches. That's what it's all about. You know, I get to speak at the funerals of a few mates of mine, and I often say our friend would rather not be here in this casket with us celebrating the achievements of his life in death. He'd rather be celebrating his achievements of life in life, being here with us. But he had no say when he went. He didn't expect to go. But if he could say something from that casket, I know what it would be. He would simply say, don't run out of life before you run out of dreams. And too many people never get to live their dreams because they're so busy working. Work is a way to realize your dreams, but you got to make it work for you.
That's right. Very well said. Well, let's go back then to the two cube or two by two by two.
By two. Yeah, let's get there. Okay, Ed, here's how this works. You've got to ask yourself, first of all, how do you get your clients to spend twice as much? That's the first two. You see, if your clients spend twice as much, you won't increase your overheads very much, but you'll double your revenue. And the sad thing is that most people do not even attempt to get people to spend more than the client planned to do. So if the client comes in for a bit of advice about their will, that's all they give them. What they should be doing is looking at other areas and making the suggestions, planting the seeds to create more business. Professionals are very poor at this because they kind of think it's like selling, and the word selling is an anathema to professionals.
Right.
The best example, Ed, of increasing the value of the sale is good old McDonald's. Because when you go to McDonald's and say you'll have a Big Mac, they never say that'll be $3.50, please. They always say to you, well, what do they say to you, Ed?
Well, they say, would you like fries with that? Would you like a drink with that?
And they always ask. Now, they say it in that order. Would you like French fries with that? Would you like a drink with that? Would you like a dessert? And they do it because they've tested and measured. And when they say it in that order, that's when they increase the value of the sale by the most amount.
Right.
And McDonald's has created more millionaires from hamburger stall owners than any other business on the face of the planet. By asking for more.
It's interesting because if you're doing, for example, a family law matter, a divorce, when that's all over, one of the things that's changed dramatically is the nature of the estate.
Yeah.
And one of the things the lawyer might do is ask, do you have a will?
Yeah.
If you don't have, we can help you, or we know somebody who can help you.
Or, of course, do it more assumptively and say, and of course, we'll need to take care of your will. What's the situation currently?
That's right.
Because we know darn well, even if they have a will, if a person has a will today, it's out of date by tomorrow anyhow. Because that son-in-law who they hate has been even more mean to their daughter and will, and grandkids have arrived and all that sort of stuff.
That's right. And even in a business situation, if you've handled a merger or a contract dispute or something of the nature, one of the things that happens if you're astute enough is that you get to know the business of your client, and you can see things that they need to do to improve their way of doing business.
Yeah. And look, one of the ways, because I know for many professionals, as I said, this is kind of like selling, and they feel a bit uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing to eliminate the discomfort is to practice, rehearse, and drill what you're going to say. But the other thing I've found to be really worthwhile is to create a checklist of questions they don't expect to be asked. So you might handle a matter for them, and then you say, Look, before you go, I want to sit down and take you through a battery of questions which we found that people in business find very helpful. And you can look at your firm, or you can look outside what your specialization is, to ask questions about many matters. It could be about environment. It could be about sexual discrimination. It could be about family trust. It could be about all those things. But the key to doing it is to ask the question in a way that they say, gee, I hadn't thought of that, or I don't know, or does this apply to me? So there's the opportunity always to increase your business, to apply that first two. Now, Ed, would you like a cunning little way to get somebody else to get more business from every client for you? Would you like to give
sure.
you that?
Sure.
Okay. You know how somebody rings up to talk to you and you're on the phone and the person answering the phone, your receptionist, says, he's on the phone, he won't be a moment. And then they put you on hold and you get that mechanical, well, that electronic Muzak stuff which drives you wild.
Mm-hmm.
You know how that happens.
Right.
Okay, well, what should happen is the receptionist says, look, he's on the phone and he's going to kill me when you get through, but ask him or ask her about, so it could be, ask her about the new thinking on family trust, or ask him about that will he did the other day. Curiosity kills the cat. As soon as they get through to you, what are they going to say to you? Tell me about that will you did the other day, or tell me about the new thinking on the trust.
You'll have to come back next week to hear the second half of this fascinating interview. You have been listening to a LawBiz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about LawBiz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.